Tarry here, where the stories never grow old, and you hear something new every time they are told and it comes clear. So tarry here, where it doesn't matter your age, and when we gather round the table, we all take the stage year after year. So tarry here, where...
We are live. Good morning and welcome to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org. This is Fanny Crawford, your storytelling co-host.
And Stasia Olkowski, your other co-host.
And we're so glad you're with us this morning. It is Monday, January 25th. And our theme today, Stash, you're astonished that I actually know the date, aren't you? And I didn't say we're in November or...
January or something. But it's okay.
Or today's Easter or whatever. Yeah. Okay. Our theme today is doomed lovers.
Right.
And you have a couple stories for us?
I have at least one.
Okay. Well, I have at least one, and yeah. I have a ballad that I'm going to beg everyone's forgiveness for. And we'll see how that goes.
Right.
Let's start out by thanking Andy Offit Irwin for his original song composition that introduces our show each day. And this is my opportunity, of course, to say that Andy Offit Irwin will be at Stories in the Round in August of 2019. But we'll talk more about the lineup for Stories in the Round later in the show. Would you like to talk about your week, or you want to talk about speak?
My week.
Was that a question? Was there a question mark at the end of that word?
Well, I'm trying to think of why I would want to talk about my week.
Did you have any story experiences?
I did at your house on Saturday at the card party.
Okay, well, you could tell a little story about the card party at my house.
It was very interesting. You have very nice friends.
I have very interesting friends. That's what you started to say.
And the first time in my life, a woman at the end of the evening, when Terry and my wife Terry and I were leaving and saying goodbye, a lovely lady by the name of Susan came and said to me, "The next time I'm going to seek you out and we're going to spend some time together."
Oh.
And I thought, where were you when I was 15? Because I've never had a woman say that to me. She seemed very nice, and she went on and said, "You were here before, and I was at a party, and we didn't say a word to each other."
No.
So I said, I promised her, I will seek you out, and we'll get to know each other.
Well, Susan, of course, is married to storyteller Steve, who you heard some stories from during the party. And so she's used to listening, but when she's at my house, she gets to choose who she listens to.
That's right.
So
I noticed that people kind of chose which room to go into.
That's right.
And Steve is the man who was the policeman in D.C., right?
Yes.
The card player.
For a while, yeah.
Right. Yeah. I would like to play poker with Steve because he was so involved in telling his story and listening to his
story. That he let me win.
That he didn't pay attention to his cards.
He knew exactly how to stop me from shooting the moon, as we say when we play hearts. And he didn't, because he wasn't paying attention. And so it was lovely to have so many storytellers in the room.
It was good.
Because my card playing was much improved.
That's right. And I shouldn't only say that about Steve, because I wasn't paying attention either, though I did not have a hand that I could have stopped you.
Well, it made my evening. It was well worth all the work to put the party on.
Right. And you won the game.
Well, I was tied with Susan, as a matter of fact. Susan is an excellent card player, and she's very good at focusing. So we ended up being tied.
I wasn't sure who was the other person.
That's
wonderful.
Yeah.
I will seek her out.
Yeah, absolutely.
I like to know the better players.
Hey, there you go. And now apparently you know one, at least one time. Me.
You can always learn from the better player.
That was a great story. Thank you, Stosh. But now I also want you to talk about Speak. You're well, not off the
I
hook.
Have the lineup. And in March 19th, Alton Chung will be here in Shepherdstown at Shepherd University. And he's going to be telling stories from Hawaii and also Japan. And I've seen him before. And in fact, I've seen him a couple of times. And he did a wonderful house concert when I was living in Pittsburgh area. And we had a packed house.
At your house?
Not at my house. Actually, it was at a friend of a friend's house. She said she would open her house to a storytelling, and she guaranteed that she could get 30 people. And she did. In fact, there were more than 30 people, and he did just a wonderful concert.
Wish I'd been there.
Yeah, it was really terrific. It's interesting about house concerts. The same lady had opened her house for another storyteller about a year later, and we had five people besides herself and the storyteller. Which was really not very good. yes, and I have no way of explaining that. I really don't think people attend house concerts easily unless they know something about the storyteller or they trust the hostess or host will have, the storyteller will be somebody that they'll enjoy. And if no one knows the storyteller, then it's a gamble.
Yeah.
You know. So.
Well, we've had some great story house concerts in this area, in this region. But yes. You're right. It is hit and miss. You've got to know what you're doing to pull that together. Okay. And
so
for March.
March
date,
19th.
March 19th. That's what I.
March 19th. Yes. And then in April. Kind of a new thing with Stories in Their Own. Michael and Carrie Klein will be in town for a week. Actually, they'll be in town probably for 8, 9, or 10 days, something like that. And they will be performing on April 9th at Speak Stories series. But on the 7th, they will be holding auditions for a Reader's Theater performance that will be done on Friday of that week. So on Sunday the 7th, they're going to have auditions, and which I am going to. I'm going to audition for whatever they're going to do. I don't know what it is, except that I know I'm going to get a chance to perform on stage. And then on the 9th, they'll do Speak Stories at in Shepherdstown, and then on the 12th there will be a performance of whatever this thing that we're going to audition for is, and there will be rehearsals throughout the week, so that will be a very busy week, especially if I get selected to be in the and I'm hoping you'll audition too.
Oh, this is the first time hearing about this. Really?
Really?
Yeah.
Well, that's the first time I had any details about it. So
okay, but is the information on the Speak website?
Yes.
Okay, so I will go back and look and check my dates and think about all of that.
Sunday the 7th. You don't have anything on that day except probably church and cooking for two or three other events. Driving 100 miles.
So this is April we're talking about?
Yes.
Okay.
And I think instead of doing a whole lineup, I'm just going to do two more.
Okay.
Carolina Quiroga Stoltz in May 7th. And that date sounds a little strange, but I think it's May 7th because of some conflict. It's normally would be a second Tuesday, but May 7th. I guess it is. Is that a second Tuesday? No. So there's something strange about that date. I'll have to check it. And then in June, on June 11th, Megan Hicks.
Yay. Who,
and I know you know her well.
Yeah.
And I know her pretty well. I've gone to a workshop with her, and she has performed at places where I've been a couple times. She did an origami workshop in Pittsburgh, and I learned how to fold a piece of paper into an object. And I think it was one step beyond making a card out of a piece of paper.
I'm sure you did a lovely job.
That has always been a mystifying thing to me. My stepson, Peter, does these things like roses and birds and things. And once he did 100 roses for a young woman. And I was really impressed because I thought that was much more romantic than buying a dozen roses. Because it took him a long time to do. And they were all beautiful. I just was really jealous of him because I'm a buyer.
Okay. I'm going to have to think about making roses. Good story.
So, okay. Are you going to tell a story?
I am going to tell a story on the theme of doomed lovers. And I guess I'll start by saying you're listening to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour, broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia. And this is a good time to say, if you're interested in past shows, you can go to talltales.enlightenradio.org.
Excuse me. Who let that duck in here?
I hope that duck's not in my story. Okay. So, in addition to today's program, you can hear lots of shows going back 3 years, I believe, on talltales.enlightenradio.org. This story is about Popocatépetl and Iztaccíhuatl, two doomed lovers from the area we now call Mexico. And in the valley where Mexico City now sits, I've learned that that area has been home to a diverse sequence of peoples. The Aztecs controlled that area before the Spanish arrived in the Western Hemisphere. But there were other peoples before that and in between the Aztecs and later groups. And overlooking the valley are two enormous volcanoes. One of them is still, I believe, active in some sense. It smokes most of the time or not infrequently. So the presence of those ancient volcanoes has been, of course, of significance for the different groups of peoples that lived in that area. They've been sources of admiration and fear, even, and have inspired lots of legends and stories about how they got to be there. And this is probably the best known today story about Popocatépetl and Iztaccíhuatl. That's the name of the two volcanoes. Well, many, many years ago, thousands of years ago, when the Aztec Empire dominated that valley in Mexico. It was not uncommon for the leaders of the empire to tax and require booty or obeisance from neighboring towns and villages. They were heavily taxed, the people who lived in the shadow of the rulers of the Aztecs. And the chief of a competing group of people, the Tlaxcaltecas, who were enemies of the Aztecs, were particularly burdened by these financial requirements, the commitments that were required of them. And the chief of the Tlaxcaltecas decided he was going to fight for freedom. Now, the chief had a daughter whose name was Itzatzihuatl. I'm not sure I'm pronouncing that quite right. It might take me a while to warm up. Itzatzihuatl. The most beautiful of all the princesses of the realm. Now, she had already made it known that she was in love with a young guerrero, a young warrior, Popocatépetl, one of her father's people, a soldier in his personal guard. And Popocatépetl had also professed that he loved the princess. So before Popocatépetl marched off to war, he asked his commander, he asked the chief, for the hand of Princess Itzatzihuatl in marriage. Now, the chief agreed, and he promised that when they returned victorious from the battles with the Aztecs, that he would reward him with a huge celebration and a wedding feast and provide his daughter's hand, providing they were victorious. Now, the guerrero, Popocatépetl, accepted and prepared himself for the coming campaign, keeping in his heart the promise, his promise to the princess, and her promise that she would be waiting for him when he returned. But there were rivals for the hand of Itzatzihuatl, and one of those jealous rivals hatched a plan to thwart the happy couple's dream. He sent word back to the court that Popocatépetl had actually died during the battle. And when Itzatzihuatl heard that her beloved had died in combat, she was just overwhelmed by sadness. It was the end of her dream of a happy life. She took her own life. So she did not learn that that story was not true. And there was a victory, at least temporary, over the Aztecs of the Tlaxcaltecas people. And Popocatépetl returned victorious to his village, to the chief, hoping to find his princess waiting for him. But of course, when he arrived, he received the terrible news of the death of Itzatzihuatl. And devastated by the news of her death, he just kind of went off the deep end and wandered about the countryside, grieving. But he collected her body and took her with him as he wandered and pondered what he was going to do with the rest of his life. And eventually he decided that the best way that he could honor her and ensure that their love would never be forgotten was to build a tomb out upon the plain, combining the rocks and dirt of 10 different hills to form a mountain. And he carried the body of his princess, Itzehoat, to the top, and took a smoking torch, and kneeling in front of her, he drifted off into his own eternal sleep. He just let go and died there on the mountain with her. And so those two lovers remained together, facing each other, the two mountains facing each other. The larger is called Popocatépetl, and the smaller is Itzehoat. And over time, snow covered their bodies. The smaller mountain is also called La Mujer Dormida, meaning the sleeping woman. And those two enormous volcanoes face each other and will remain together until the end of time. Now, the legend goes on to say that when Popocatépetl remembers his beloved, his heart, that part of him that preserves the fire of eternal passion, shakes and quivers, and his torch smokes. And that's why even today the Popocatépetl volcano continues to spew smoke and ash. And this legend has been passed on from generation to generation since the time of the Aztec Empire. And they have been important to the people that inhabit that valley through time. So that's my story of doomed lovers.
That's sad.
It is a sad story.
Sad story.
But it has its own grandeur.
Yes. Hearing a story like that, first of all, I would be tempted. I admire your gall. That's not the bit right word.
In speaking Aztec words, is that what you're going to say?
I would have said, I would have faked an English translation to something like Isabel and Harry. Because it's difficult to pronounce.
It is difficult to pronounce.
A lot. I've been to Mexico a few times. I don't speak any language other than English, and don't always speak that well. So, but many of the names that I've come across during vacations in Mexico were very difficult to pronounce.
Yes.
Because they go back to the time of the Aztecs. And so.
Well, I did have to practice, but I love the idea of ancient languages and the fact that there are still some Aztec speakers in Mexico who speak Nahuatl, which I think is the correct pronunciation of the language that the Aztecs spoke. And I'm just fascinated by all of those consonants in those words.
Right.
So learning to say them correctly by going online and asking Google.
That's a nice thing about
how do you pronounce? Right. So
you can get pronunciation of almost anything nowadays on the internet. One of the things that saddens me a bit about the stories that you can hear and read about the volcanoes throughout the world is that having a science education and trying, especially as a young science teacher, chemistry and some math, I know things that I can't put aside when I hear legends, you know.
I would sometimes I've thought it would be nice to be ignorant of the science and just listen to a tale from Hawaii or from Mexico or from some of the other places where they have volcanic islands and hear the tale of whatever gods are there or whatever people are there without knowing how the volcano works. Sometimes knowledge destroys the beauty of nature, in my mind.
Yeah, maybe. Not so much. I guess, I don't know. I've been practicing since I was a toddler how to keep two ideas in your head at the same time and suspend disbelief so that you can do that.
Well, I can suspend disbelief, but I think it's mostly out of ignorance. That's the easiest way to suspend disbelief. Well, you're listening to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org, broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia. And I'm co-host Stosh Sielkowski, and our other co-host,
Fanny Crawford,
just told a tale of doomed lovers based on the Aztec language and a story from Mexico. So, I have a tale that I'd like to share. And in my tale, nobody dies. But it's still, this would be a tale of doomed love. Because nobody winds up being in or around the volcano. And I believe I've told at least one story, probably more than one, about a young girl by the name of Jane, who was my first serious love. Jane and I met when I was in high school. First time we became acquainted was I was a sophomore in high school, and she was in the eighth grade. And we met at a party, and I enjoyed meeting her. We had lots of fun. It was kind of silly fun. We played kind of cops and robbers game at a birthday party. And actually, it was more like cowboys and Indians, and she pretended to be an Indian. And so it was kind of silly, but I found it very charming. And later that year, the next time I saw her was months later, and we met at a dance and shared a few dances, and I asked her if she would go on a date with me. And back in those days, before cell phones and before everybody owned a colored television and all that stuff, a lot of dates were movie dates, and I suffered through a traditional 15-year-old male movie date by putting my arm behind her across the back of the chair she was in on my right and keeping it there, scared to death that if I moved it, I might... Actually, my thought was I might touch her in some way that would be offensive. And nowadays, I think I can't imagine what it could have done, because I wouldn't have done anything on purpose. But anyway, it was a terrible date, because we hardly talked at all. And after the movie, it was a double feature. So for approximately 3.5 hours or so, I had my arm around the back of her chair and near her shoulders. And I think one of the reasons I no longer could throw a baseball very well was because of that. I think my arm died a little bit that day. Anyway, at the end of the date, I walked her home, which was another thing that we did in those days when it was not automatic that a 16-year-old might get a driver's license. In fact, I only knew one good friend who had a driver's license at the age of 16. And anyway, time went by, and Jane and I didn't see each other again until the day before my senior year began, and happened to be in Patterson Park, and she was with a group of girls. I was with a group of guys watching a baseball game, and the girls came over, and we were making small talk, and I am completely not ashamed to say that I was just bowled over by being in Jane's presence. I was smitten, and I'm sure at the time, although my anybody older than I was would have laughed at that idea, but I just fell madly in love with her. I walked her home from the park, and we spent that year, my senior year in high school, seeing each other as much as possible. And much to my mother's irritation, I spent far too much time thinking about Jane. I stopped practicing the accordion because that got in the way of thinking about Jane. And I was busy playing soccer, having to do some homework at times. And also, I was in the band and in the orchestra of the school I attended, so that kept me busy also. But throughout that year, we became closer and closer together. At Christmas time, we became engaged. That is a whole other story. After we became engaged, kind of accidentally, and I can't tell that story now, but it was an accepted fact that we were an engaged couple. Me at the age of 17, Jane at the age of 15. I know my father got a great deal of pleasure about thinking about that and laughing about it, because he had a three-strike rule, and both of my older brothers had some real problems getting married young. And so my father invoked his three-strike rule and told me and Jane together at a nice dinner that we would not get married until I was at least 21. And that he would be glad to dance at our wedding, but not before then. And Jane thought that was kind of sort of cute that my father didn't want me to commit the same mistakes that my brothers did. Anyway, throughout my senior year, we were together constantly, as much as possible. And when I graduated, a number of real problems popped up in our relationship. One was that my mother still did not accept the fact that I wasn't going to be a priest, and did as much as she could to kind of cool off our romance by making it difficult for me to do as much as I wanted to see Jane. In the summertime after high school, I wanted to see her every single day. And her mother didn't mind at all. And so it was a real problem in my household. The other problem was I was 17, wouldn't turn 18 until the end of the summer. I weighed 110 pounds, and I couldn't get a job. I had taken tests, a civil service test, and I scored real well on the test, and it made me eligible for lots of work that was government-funded in the area. I went to the shipyard and applied for a job, and I went to a number of other places, and all the jobs that I applied for, which paid a decent salary were jobs meant for people who were a little bit bigger than 5'5" and 110 pounds. In fact, at one of the job interviews, the man interviewing me suggested that I would do better working in a library or some place like that rather than in one of these construction jobs. So, with continued pressure from my mother about Jane, and with real pressure about not being able to get a job that paid any decent wage, I decided to join the Army. It was both the smartest and dumbest thing I ever did. Smartest because 3 years in the Army taught me a lot and helped me make up my mind to go to college, and then I had a wonderful career as a teacher, but dumb because it took me away from Jane. So I went in the Army, didn't get a leave for almost 6 months, and when I did get a leave, went home to Baltimore, was only there for 7 days. Got home on Christmas morning, had to leave on New Year's Day to go back to Texas, and I did spend part of every day seeing Jane, being with her. A really stupid thing happened on New Year's Eve. We went to a party, and Jane drank a little bit too much. She had never had anything to drink before, and neither had I, and it made her sick. So when we got home, I was hoping her mother wouldn't be awake and that Jane could just go up to her bedroom and go to sleep. Unfortunately, her mother met us at the door, and her mother was very upset with me. And I don't blame her. So Jane did go with me to the train station the next day. My parents drove me to the train station, and we said our goodbyes. And Jane asked me to write to her at her aunt's house instead of at her home, because her mother was upset with me. And she said her mom will cool down and it'll, you know, blow over, but for now. So I did. I wrote to her, letters to her from Texas. And the strange thing happened. I didn't get any replies. So January, February, March, April, there was no word from Jane. And I figured that our romance was over. It turned out that Jane's mother discovered that I was writing letters to Jane at her aunt's house and mailing them to aunt's house, and convinced her sister, Jane's aunt, to throw the letters away. It was, to me, very Shakespearean when I found it out later. But at the end of July that summer, I was given a leave of 30 days because I was being shipped to Germany. And I would be there for almost 2 years. I came home to Baltimore for that leave and happened to bump into a friend of Jane's and told her about Jane not answering any of my letters for months, and that I just figured it was over. And Dottie, that was the girlfriend's name, Dottie told me that Jane had been heartbroken that I never answered any of her letters, that I didn't write to her anymore, we had made an arrangement that she would write to me and I would answer her, and she would write to me and I would answer her. But since I didn't get any letters from her, I didn't answer her. Anyway, since Dottie told me this, I thought there was maybe a chance that I could see Jane again. I went to her house. She answered the door, and probably in 6 or 7 minutes, we both blurted out our undying love and found out that we had been sidetracked by her mother, who by now had forgotten all about why she was angry with me. Her mother was home, welcomed me into the house, and we had a very good reacquaintance, and Jane and I were engaged again. Well, a 30-day leave went by very quickly. I was going to go to Germany. My mother's last-ditch effort to derail my romance with Jane was my parents drove me to New Jersey and up to New York, around to the Brooklyn Naval Yard, where I was to board a ship to go to Germany. And although I had tried my best to get my parents to bring Jane, my mother told me they had decided they were going to take a few days vacation after taking me up there, and that they didn't want to have to be bothered with bringing Jane back home. I can't say that they were lying, but I don't think that was really true, because they were back home just 2 days after I boarded the ship. Anyway, off to Germany and writing letters, and everything seemed really fine, except for one thing. I had turned 19, Jane had just turned 17, and for some reason in my 19-year-old brain, I actually thought that being away for over a year, it turned out to be 16 months that I was in Germany before I got another leave, that Jane would just sit at home and write letters to me and would be perfectly happy. And it turned out that that really wasn't true. Sometime during the next winter, after about 5 or 6 months of letter writing, I found out that she wanted to go out, and I made a heroic decision and broke off our engagement and said that if she wanted to date other people, then that was fine. And it really wasn't fine with me. However, I was trying to be a noble person, and actually it made me very miserable. The next time I saw Jane was Christmas, 16 months after I'd gone to Germany. I was home on a leave, and we met at one of her girlfriend's houses. The girlfriend had arranged this meeting. I was going to see Bonnie, and Jane was there. And we talked. We spent a couple hours together, and I walked her home from there, and she told me she was dating a nice college student from Johns Hopkins. And I told her about my pen pal and that I was writing to in Pennsylvania, and I was going to be going seeing her. And we said our goodbyes that night, and that was the end of our romance. And it was doomed from the beginning because we were too young,
And because I definitely was too young and really thought that it was okay to ask a 16-year-old to sit and wait while I was off in Germany.
Doomed.
Terribly doomed.
Doomed.
And I often talk to my father about this. I never spoke to my mother about it because when I got it, the day I came home from the army, my mother had died the day before. And so I never got to really have a chat with my mom about lots of things. But I told my father, if they hadn't gotten in our way and they had approved of us getting married when I got out of high school, that I was convinced we would have had a wonderful marriage and a great life together. My father actually had a look on his face just like yours right now. Like, oh, you sweet little boy.
Wow. Well, I have heard most of that story at least one other occasion, but it's a wonderful story. I'm happy to hear it again, especially to hear from the middle-aged Stosh now.
Wow.
Yeah. About what you've learned since then.
Yeah. I got a lot of teasing because I was so convinced and sure that, you know, we would have had a great life together.
Well, you might have.
We might have.
Who knows?
But
it's a sweet story.
Yes.
Thank you for sharing. I'm going to talk... first of all, I'm going to tell people that this is the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour on enlightenedradio.org from Bolivar, West Virginia. And I'm Fanny Crawford.
And I'm Stosh Ziolkowski.
And our theme today is Doomed Lovers. And Stosh has just told a delightful personal story about being doomed himself and his recovery from said doom. And I'm going to talk briefly about stories in the round and tell our listeners that we are set to go on the fourth Monday in March. I'm shuffling papers looking for my calendar. Here it is. So that date would be March 25th. And our storyteller on March 25th will be Anokwale Anansi Sefo. And Anokwale is a Baltimore storyteller. She's also a historian and a U.S. Park Service ranger guide who works at Hampton Plantation. She's coming on her own recognizance as a historian. She's not coming as an employee of the Park Service. But she will be telling stories about Maryland enslaved women from colonial times up through the post-Civil War era. And I know she's going to include the story of Nancy Davis, who was... born about 1837, something like that. I might have that date wrong. At Hampton Plantation, which is now Towson, Maryland, and lived almost her entire life on that plantation. She raised the Ridgely children, who were the owners of the estate, and married and was emancipated before the Civil War, but she stayed through the Civil War on the estate. And there are writings about her from the family that lived there. And it's a fascinating story, but there will be others that she speaks of as well. And I heard her speak at the National Association for Black Storytellers in Cary, North Carolina, this past fall, and was just enthralled by her storytelling, but also by her knowledge and depth of history. I heard history from her that I had just skirted around the edges of, both growing up and hearing African-American history from my family, but and then the bits of reading that I've done since then. So the setting and the people and the locale of many of her stories are familiar to me, but the depth of her knowledge is just incredible. And I hope we get a packed house for her on March 25th for the opening, grand opening of Stories in the Round for season 6, the 2019 season. And then in April, on April 22nd, which is Earth Day, we'll be hearing from Janice Curtis Green, who is another National Association of Black Storytellers officer and teller. And she will be telling African stories, folk tales, some personal stories, and some African-American traditional stories as well. And I'm thrilled that she will be joining us also. In May, we will be hearing from Elaine Dull Murray, who will be coming all the way from the West Coast to tell stories for us. And that's the 27th of May. And Elaine tells a lot of Celtic tales and personal stories. And I've heard her tell twice, I think. Stash was with me one of those times.
In the coffee shop.
In the coffee shop outside of Shepherdstown. She tells an amazing Lady Ragnall, part of the Arthurian cycle of stories. In June, I have completely forgotten who is in June. Well, okay, I'm not going to go through the the whole roster, yeah. But we have most of the year complete. Only the last 2 months I don't have confirmation for. I know that Donald Davis is coming to Stories in the Round this year. Andy Offit Irwin is coming to Stories in the Round. Jim May is coming to Stories in the Round. Oh, June is Noah Baum, who will be coming and telling a tale, Land Twice Promised. And Dovie Thomason is coming in October. So we have a really full, amazing program.
Those five, I mean, all of them I know will be good, but those 5 months, well.
Yeah, just to have
so
worked them in.
Jonesboro.
Well, it's largely because of Jonesboro that we have them, because that's where I heard many of them tell.
Yeah.
But I'm just on pins and needles waiting for a great season. So I hope you join us for the opening on March 20. See, I have already forgotten the date. Fourth Monday of the month in March, March 25th, same as February, 1 month from today. And we'll have season tickets on sale any moment now. And so if you want more information, you can call me, Fanny Crawford, at 301-730-1638, and or reach me by email, Fanitsky, Fanitsky, at hotmail.com. And tickets are $10 in advance, $12 at the door. Each of the shows is 7 p.m. on the fourth Monday. There's at least 1 month, maybe 2 months, when we go to a different, we go to the third Monday, but you can find that out. That's not in March or April or May. So you'll know that we will be the fourth Monday each of those months. And season tickets, you get a significant discount. I don't have the math in front of me right this minute, but there's a significant discount if you buy all of your tickets at the same time, and you get a little card with your own name on it, and that will be honored at the door, of course. So, that's all I'm going to say about that.
Wow. Well, we're almost out.
We are. I'm going to sing a really quick version of A Doomed Lover's Ballad. We have 6.5 minutes, so I'm going to sing an abbreviated version of The Four Maries, which some of our listeners may also know as the Ballad of Mary Hamilton. Here we go. Doomed lovers. Word is to the kitchen gone, word is to the hall, and word is up to Madam the Queen, and that's the worst of all, that Mary Hamilton's born a babe to the highest steward of all. Arise, arise, Mary Hamilton, arise and share with me what thou hast done with thy wee babe, I saw and heard weep by thee. I put him in a tiny boat and set him out to sea, that he might sink or he might swim, but he'd never come back to me. Last night there were four Maries, this night there'll be but three. There was Mary Beaton and Mary Seaton and Mary Carmichael and me. Arise, arise, Mary Hamilton, arise and come with me. There is a wedding in Glasgow town, tonight we'll go and see. She put not on her robe of black, nor on her robe of brown. She put on her pure white robe to ride to Glasgow town. And as they rode through Glasgow town, the bailiff, the city for to see, the bailiff's wife and the provost's wife cried out, alack for thee. You need not weep for me, she cried, you need not pity me. Had I not slain my own wee babe, this gallows I would not see. Oh, little did my mother think, when first she cradled me, the lands I was to travel in, and the death I was to see. Last night I washed the queen's own feet, and set the rose in her hair. And all the reward I've got this night is the gallows to be my share. By and by the king himself looked up with a pitying eye. Come down, Mary Hamilton, this night you'll dine with me. Oh, hold your tongue, my sovereign, and let your folly be. If you'd a mind to save my life, you'd never have shamed me. Last night there were four Maries, this night there'll be but three. There was Mary Beaton and Mary Seaton and Mary Carmichael and me.
Wow. Never heard that before.
Really?
I didn't know.
Oh, my
gosh. That's lovely.
Okay, well, we'll talk about the history of that song some other time, okay. But take us out.
Stash. All right.
Bonk.
This is Stash Ziolkowski and
Fanny Crawford,
your co-host for the Noontime Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenradio.org. Independent community radio in Bolivar, West Virginia. Closing out this week's show. The Storytelling Hour offers listeners a window into the world of storytelling by traditional and non-traditional storytellers, encouraging our listening community to share, preserve, and expand all of our stories. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned to enlightenradio.org. And don't forget, you can hear our podcasts at talltales.enlightenradio.org. And there are many of our shows going back almost 2 years.
Stay tuned, and we'll see you, sort of, next Monday at 12 noon.